We're talking about Oregon's Death with Dignity Act and the Justice Department's attempt to overturn it. My guest, Dr. Paul Stahl, practices in Oregon and opposes physician-assisted suicide. He's hospice and pain management consultant for Physicians for Compassionate Care, a group that opposes the Death with Dignity Act. He served on the State Task Force on Pain and Symptom Management. He's a past president of the Oregon Hospice Association and a former member of Oregon's Catholic Conference Board. I asked him why he feels he could not prescribe a lethal dose of drugs for a patient who asked for it.
One, I think that it's morally wrong, and two, that it has a great deal of social problems with it, and three, it's not a medical indication. When I took the Hippocratic Oath, it said I took an oath that I would not give somebody a lethal dose of medication, and I believe that we should keep our oaths.
Have you ever been in a position where one of your terminally ill patients asked you to help them die and said, I can't face this life any longer?
Patients who have asked me to help them in their lives, and it happens many times, there are many, many options. Even when the normal medications and medical treatments to end someone's, to control someone's pain, we have terminal or total sedation for those who reach or exhaust all other medical possibilities. So pain management is applicable to handling this problem.
How do you think the law in Oregon has functioned so far from the anecdotes you've heard from patients and from doctors?
Well, it's really difficult because the people who are doing the statistics is the Oregon Health Division. And that's like the fox guarding the chicken house, is that to really look at the statistics, this should be more of a bipartisan group. I think people on both sides should have doctors and physicians and ethicists look at the statistics. But if you look at it, it ranges from about 6 to about 9 persons per 10,000 who are dying who utilize that. In other words, only 0.1% have opted out for physician suicide, which tells you that most people in Oregon dying do not use this this function. I think when it first started out in 98, there were only 25 requests, and that's jumped up to about 48 in the last year, and only around less than 30 people have actually done this. Now, you can say we have had an increased use of morphine in this state. We have only 0.1% of patients wanting physician-assisted suicide. But studies in our nursing homes here that almost 50% of our patients have pain who are admitted, and 6 to 9 months later, those patients are still in pain. So we still have a major pain management problem in this state.
So that's one of your
priorities.
That's
a paradox. Yeah, it's a matter of priorities. And I sympathize with people who have significant disease, significant dementia, neurological disorders. We can manage their physical pain. I think we can manage their spiritual and psychological pain if we had a different priority and different funding. And I'm saying how society uses its resources is really the issue here. It's what are we going to be like as a society? Because you can see only a relatively small amount of patients are using it. The Oregon law written is not a bad law if you believe in this. My question is, I don't think it's right from a physician. People always have committed suicide, but we don't need doctors to do this. I'm a very competent physician and have few peers in this. I would not want the power to do this, even in the best light. This is a very frightening thing to have in your hands.
The argument on the other side is that when people do commit suicide themselves, they often use more violent means, slitting their wrists, shooting themselves. And it's a more violent way of ending your life and a more a frightening end for those who survive you.
I understand that, but does that make it right? Does it really make it right? There are books on what most patients do. They high-grade their medications. There are a lot of ways of committing suicide. And most of this is, basically is depression. We have to look at the big picture of what are we teaching our children, how to live, how to die.
Do you have patients who have asked you what your stand is on this, and whether if they wanted it down the line, if you would help them die.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I explain my position. Mm-hmm. I will help them. I will help them die in an appropriate fashion. I believe I help people die every day. If they opt out for physician-assisted suicide, they can call the organizations in this state, Death with Dignity, but I will not abandon the patient. Even a patient or their family who opt out for this, I will still be there for them. I will not attend that act, but I'm not going to abandon somebody because they make those decisions. I will offer them counseling and pain management, and I'll be there. That's my function as a doctor.
You'd like to see our society pay more attention to palliative care and take some of the resources that might be put into physician-assisted suicide into palliative care. But sometimes, you know, pain management or palliative care isn't the issue for the person. The issue just might be the complete lack of pleasure that's left in life, the complete despair brought on by losing control of one's body and one's bodily functions.
Well, see, what you're talking about is pain, and pain is not just physical pain. There's psychological pain, what you're talking about, spiritual pain, financial and social pain. Those are issues that we have not really addressed as well as we could have. As far as the relief of physical pain through palliative care and hospice physicians, like as myself, we're getting better and better at that. I think where the real deficit is how do we take care of our social and psychological needs? And I think that's where our emphasis. You know, it's the rights of the one versus the rights of all. You know, the needs of the one versus the needs of the all. And that's my belief pattern. It's my experience in dealing with people. It's not just me. It's who is surviving me and my children.
Is there an example you can remember where a patient came to you and asked for your help in committing suicide, or asked for your advice because they wanted to take their own life? You advised them against it. They lived, and they were glad to live the remainder of their life, no matter how brief.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, several instances where there was healing in families. The person I was thinking about is they had some significant family issues. Children had not talked to each other or their parents. It gave him another 4 or 5 months for that family to bring together. And the wife and the children made peace and actually started a new life together. It was beautiful, you know, and I was privileged to be part of that. On the other hand, I told another patient, he went home and shot himself, and the whole family was totally devastated. We win some, we lose some, you know.
After that patient of yours went home and shot himself, did it make you second guess yourself, like maybe a prescription lethal dose would have been a better way to end the life?
No, I didn't think that. Just that selfish act of dying that way without his wife and children there was just terrible. I don't think it's how you do it. It's just the act itself, because they needed time. Because in the discussion afterwards in the family, there were many issues that had never been solved and could have been solved, and the children would have been better off.
Do you have religious objections to physician-assisted suicide?
Do I think it's morally wrong? Yes. But I'm not a judge of the person. I think the act is wrong.
Dr. Paul Stull is hospice and pain management consultant for Physicians for Compassionate Care in Oregon. This is Fresh Air.